Managing Men's Health During the Pandemic.
Mental health issues have been described as a potential second wave of the COVID-19 pandemic, with many Australians struggling during the lockdown. And men in particular may be reluctant to seek help when they're having problems like anxiety and relationship issues. When men do present with low physical, mental and sexual energy, it may be appropriate to investigate whether low testosterone levels could be the cause, so that they can be provided with the most appropriate treatment options. Today, we're talking with Dr. Stephen Adams, Medical Director of Integrated Sexual Health, a clinic in Fremantle that provides assessment and treatment of all aspects of sexual health and is actively involved in education and research. Stephen, welcome to Drive Time Medical.
Hello, Ginny.
The lockdown restrictions, Stephen, they're likely to have affected everyone's sense of well-being in some sort of way. We are aware that levels of anxiety among the community have really risen greatly. Are you noticing this with men who come to your clinic? Are the restrictions actually affecting men's relationships?
Yes, definitely. It was interesting when it first happened that patients with anxiety actually often felt better because everybody else had got them. You know, everybody was feeling catastrophizing, everybody was pessimistic, everybody was hypervigilant and anxious. So they sort of felt more at home. But as time's gone on, I think this has been worn down and there's sort of been accumulation of negativity from the media and from lack of social contact. And a lot of the sort of self-protective things that men in particular have, like going to the pub with their mates or going out and playing sport, meeting up with girlfriends or whatever, they've not been able to do any of those things. And I think that the pressure on mental health has gradually increased over the months.
So are men coming to you for help during this COVID-19 period? I mean, are they aware about the options for telehealth consultations? And are men actually comfortable discussing mental health and sexual health via telehealth?
First of all, I think the publicity for its availability was very poor initially. I mean, from our point of view, from a business point of view, we were very anxious because we saw fewer and fewer patients coming in. And so it was very good, if you like, to have this availability, but we had to initiate the contact because patients didn't really know about it. I think patients or men seem to go into two categories. There is the sort of head in the sand, ignore it and pretend everything's okay. And often it's not them, but their partner or friends that might suggest that they need to do something. Or there are those that anxiety has increased and they reach out and they say, hey, I need help. And it's difficult because it sort of polarized men into those two groups.
So, Stephen, you know this all too well. If a man does say that his physical and mental and sexual energy are lower than normal and it's been going on for some time, it could be due to low testosterone. And in that case, you might want to ask the patient to come to a clinic like yours for further examination and testing. But what do we GPs do? What investigations should we get the ball rolling with?
Well, I think when a man presents with the symptoms that we're talking about, which is often, I suppose, summarised as being a loss of mojo, but a loss of energy, loss of motivation, loss of libido, maybe poor sexual function. Clearly, there are a lot of causes for that. But it's very easy just to write that off as being, well, you know, clearly you're stressed or you're depressed or whatever. But I think men also respond best if they feel that they've been checked out. It's all very well to reassure somebody there's nothing wrong, but if they're not being examined and they've not had other things excluded, such as testosterone deficiency, then it leaves them feeling unhappy that this diagnosis has been made. So even if I have already made the decision in the back of my mind that the most likely thing here is, for example, depression, I still think that man needs to be assessed. With telehealth, obviously you can't physically examine somebody, but you might say to them, okay, well, let's organise some blood tests for you, do a screen to exclude certain things, and then if we can arrange for you to come down to the surgery for a physical examination, we can go through all the results. And men respond well to feel that they're being assessed properly.
Stephen, are there any other things you'd want to check before you would decide to move on to treatment?
Yes, Jenny. So having got our two or three morning testosterone levels, if, for example, you believe that there is signs of pituitary disorder, you may need to organise an MRI of the pituitary. In certain patients, obviously, you need to exclude prostate cancer, so that might involve examination and PSA testing. depending on the history, you might also want to do sleep studies to exclude sleep apnea. So there are a number of what I would call tertiary investigations. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean you have to not start treatment, but I think that really these are things that you have to do to be sure that there are no contraindications or relative contraindications to initiating treatment.
Makes sense. Let me play devil's advocate here. What's the problem with androgen deficiency? Why bother treating it?
Androgen deficiency is associated with a number of conditions. I suppose it depends on how you define androgen deficiency, but I think if you're looking at the significantly low levels, less than 6, that the PBS require you to have, that is associated with definite increase in bone loss and weakness of bones and muscles. It's associated with increase in cardiovascular risk. It's associated with depression, loss of sexual function. It really is, I suppose, being old before your time. People worry that giving testosterone is associated with a lot of side effects, but in actual fact, having low testosterone is much more harmful for you than normalizing testosterone with replacement therapy.
Well, let's talk numbers, because if testosterone deficiency has been confirmed both clinically and biochemically, it might be appropriate to start prescribing testosterone replacement therapy for some men for male hypogonadism. But what are the levels of testosterone that we need to make it appropriate to treat with that sort of testosterone therapy? Because there are numbers that are moving all around and it's hard for a GP to get their heads around it.
Yes, this has been a long and difficult debate, I suppose, because the recommended levels to initiate treatment or to qualify for treatment vary from one country to another, and also because the levels of normal that we're given as a reference from the laboratory vary from laboratory to laboratory, and a reference for all men, so not necessarily for the male group that you're talking about. So the normal range, for example, for a 75-year-old man are not going to be the same as the normal range for a 35-year-old man, but on your blood test results, you'll still see, for example, 8 to 35. I find it most useful to divide the results into three categories. In my mind, repeated levels less than 8 nanomoles per liter are testosterone deficient. Between 8 and 12, I would classify them as borderline, and above 12, I would say they're normal. So what that means in real life is if a man comes to see me and he's got all the symptoms and he believes he is testosterone deficient, but his level is 16, then I'm going to look him in the eye and say, testosterone deficiency is not the cause of your problem. If a man is 8 to 12, on the other hand, I might say to him, look, there are many men walking around functioning completely normal with testosterone levels of 9.5 or 10, but there are other men who every time the levels drop below 12, their function is significantly impaired. So we really don't know whether testosterone deficiency is responsible for your symptoms. And then the third group, the below 8 group, you're going to be saying to the patient, look, this is not good for you to have low testosterone, and if you're symptomatic, I'm going to recommend testosterone therapy. And then when we come to actually treating testosterone, when I think about the levels, I think there are two categories of testosterone prescribing. There's obviously those patients that comply with the PBS restrictions and regulations, but then there are other patients who may have clinical and confirmed biochemical testosterone deficiency, but who do not fall into the categories that are currently allowed for PBS prescribing. And then there's always the option for private prescription for the agents. Does that help clarify things?
Yeah, well, while we're clarifying things, can you talk me through the treatment options?
Yes, I think, again, although there are lots of treatment options available in theory, in practice, the choice is quite simple in Australia between topical treatments. We have 2 gels and 1 cream, and long-acting injections, for which we've got 1 preparation. Going through the ones that I do not believe are useful, capsules, Andriol, been around for many years, but bioavailability is poor and levels very unreliable. I never prescribe them. Patches have been available for some time. They're poorly tolerated, particularly in our climate. And again, I really have given up trying to prescribe those. I find them very poorly accepted. And then the short-acting injections have the advantage of being cheap, but they give quite a sawtooth level, very high levels followed by very low levels, and that has not been shown to be good from a metabolic, physiological or functional result.
I have also read about testosterone replacement causing higher levels of haemoglobin, so increasing hematocrit. Is that a thing, and what can we do to reduce it?
Yes, it is. It's a common side effect, particularly of the long-acting injectables. In a recent study performed in Australia, just recently published, 20% of patients on long-acting injectables developed polycythemia. This is not polycythemia rubra vera, it's an increased hematocrit, which is to do with the raised testosterone levels, and is probably reflective of a period of time following the injection when the levels are supraphysiological. It's far less common in patients using topical gels, probably because the level is constant and doesn't go through that high level.
So let's say you opt for a gel instead. What are the guidelines around using a gel and then touching other members of the family?
The guidelines are that there is skin-to-skin transmission possible following administration. The reported cases are very few and far between, and I think in terms of danger or clinical significance, the two groups that are really important to stress are pregnant partner and younger children. It is important to advise the man that when he has the application of the gel, he should choose a time where for 5 or 6 hours afterwards, he won't have to shower or swim, and he will avoid skin-to-skin contact with anybody else.
We've been talking about sort of identifying this by the man coming forward and saying that he's got a problem, but it's not just the men who raise this issue, is it? I mean, sometimes it can be the partner of the man with the symptoms of low testosterone because they can be affected by this whole problem as well, right?
Yes, it's very interesting. About 20 years ago, I think, there was the first commercial testosterone clinic started in Australia. And so advertisements were run in the local press, and they sort of described grumpy old man syndrome. And it was quite interesting because it was often the wife or partner that would present their grumpy old man to get him assessed and fixed, because they would have read this advert and said, "That's my man." And it's still true now that often it's the partner who will notice these symptoms. Men are notorious for being ostriches and just ignoring things. And the grumpiness in itself will often cause withdrawal and avoidance, not just of sex, but of intimacy and of going out and doing things. So it's often the partner will say he's just not the man he used to be. And the same thing happens with people who are on testosterone treatment. If they, for example, run out of their script or delay their injection or whatever, it's often their wife or partner who'll be dragging them in saying it's time he had his injection or it's time he got his repeat prescription.
Stephen, thanks so much for talking us through testosterone deficiency. Can you summarise the key messages for the GPs who are listening to us today?
Yes, Jenny. Firstly, consider testosterone deficiency in a man who presents with symptoms, even if you may think that the symptoms are due to other conditions, because it is a subtle condition and it's an easy condition to diagnose. The second point is don't jump in with treatment until you've made a full diagnosis and assessment of the cause of the testosterone deficiency, if there is, and to exclude contraindications to its use. Thirdly, choose a treatment that is acceptable to the patient and has evidence for it. And in Australia, that is really topical gels or long-acting injections. Monitor the patient. Remembering the hemoglobin is a common side effect, but also needing to monitor the levels and prostate, liver function, calcium. And thirdly, remember compliance. It's easy to initiate treatment, but we do need to ensure compliance, and often recruiting the patient's partner in this is a useful intervention in itself.
Dr. Stephen Adams, thanks so much for joining us once again on Drive Time Medical.
Thank you very much for having me.
Please note the following PBS information for Testogel. Authority required. Refer to PBS schedule for full information. Please review the product information before prescribing. The product information and substantiating references can be obtained from the Drive Time Radio website. This interview was supported by Besson's Healthcare, produced August 2020.